Morning, honourable members and the delegation from the health department and the social SAFA. Social development. Okay. Oh, it's not SAFA. It's social development.
Okay.
Today we've got two items on our agenda, members. If you have the program before you, we are dealing with the consideration of the final mandate on the National Health Amendment Bill first, then it will be followed by the annual report briefing by the Department of Social Development. And it will take a little bit longer, but let's start with the bill. I think today we've gone through the necessary processes that we need to follow in the bill. What I have to do now is simply to go through all the provinces to check their final mandates. What are they suggesting so that we can finalize the process and to go to table it before the NCOP plenary? I will rely on the honorable members to assist me because I've observed that some of the members have submitted their apologies. For instance, Western Cape is not here. They submitted their apology. We'll be reading. One of the members will assist in reading. Yeah. Those who are not here, Free State is also not here, observed. Also Northwest will assist us. But we do have their mandates here. And if there's anything that the our list, advisors, they want to assist us on anything, you'll raise your hands. Where are you, gentlemen? From our legal? Yes, yes. If there's anything that you want to assist us on, you just raise your hand. Yeah. Can I start with Eastern Cape? Oh, you don't have a mandate. Okay, I wanted that to be registered here. Do we have anything to assist us in that? Okay, continue with Eastern Cape.
Chairperson, I haven't received anything from the Eastern Cape. I tried to contact the portfolio chairperson. He never came back to me, so I don't have anything.
Yeah, we will just note that we don't have any mandate from Eastern Cape. And it has also been reported that also Free State, if I'm correct, doesn't have a mandate. They're sitting today, so they won't be able to forward any mandate today. The next province, KZN, we have our colleague here.
She's before K.
So my alphabet, I'm confused. Okay, G.
Thanks, Chairperson. GP doesn't also have a mandate. They sent a mandate that was unsigned, so send it back.
Okay. Okay. The following ones will be KZN.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Colleagues, in KZN, we've had the public consultation process that was very successful. We've considered the inputs from the various stakeholders, and our legislator is sitting right now, and in fact I'm very grateful to them because they considered this bill first and have forwarded to us a final mandate, and in the mandate we are saying, Chairperson, that we support this bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. I will request other members, which ones are you going to assist us on, to rate those who are not here but they have their mandates, for instance, Limpopo, Northern Cape, and Northwest.
Northern Cape. I'm Limpopo here unless he comes in because I
know. Yeah, I saw him too. Yes. Okay, let me come to you with yes. You can read yours or Mpumala.
Oh, Mpumala.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair. The final mandate from Mpumalanga, so the delegation representing the province of Mpumalanga in the National Council of Provinces
is hereby conferred with a mandate to vote in favor of the bill.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Malonga. Next one.
Limpopo. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read on behalf of Limpopo. In conclusion, I move that this report be adopted as a report of the August House and that a voting mandate be conferred to the NCOP delegates accordingly. I don't know, it's got so many things. Oh, the Limpopo legislature to vote in favor of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes. Welcome, Honorable Member Plaki. Honorable Ranto, so that we can allow Plaki to prepare himself to read on Northwest. Honorable Ranto, do we have anyone that... Western Cape, do we have... Okay, Western Cape, do you have it with you? Can you read Western Cape for us?
Western Cape is the Western
There is Northwest, they have just circulated Northwest. Do you have it, Honorable Plaki?
No.
Okay. Okay, it's coming. All right, Northwest, then we're left to switch problems. Yeah, Northwest. Yeah. Region Northwest?
Yep.
The Portfolio Committee on Health and Social Development, Women, Children and People with Disability Committee vote in favor of the bill, noting the concerns as raised by inter alia the laboratory medical group, Dr. Dietrich Ford in MIA and partners and PathCare, as stated in their mandate. Okay. I vote in favor, Chair.
Thank you very much, Northwest. Northern Cape, can you read your...
Thank you, Madam Chair. The final mandate is the name of the bill, the National Amendment Bill, B24B 2011. Date of the deliberation was on the 1st of November 2012. The legislator votes in favor of the bill with the amendments.
Thank you very much, Honorable Faber. Any other thing that you'd like to report on? Nothing. We're all done. Okay, do I have to read that now? Yes, Honorable Mumbe? Later.
Chairperson, we one, two, three, seven provinces,
six, two, four, six.
Okay, I just want to raise this technicality, Chairperson. The speaker, actually, Kimberly, yeah. Kimberly, you say, Northern Cape says the number of the bill is 24B 2011, and the Mpumalanga one says the number of the bill B 24D, and Northwest it says B 24B. So I'm saying I don't have a bill, the revised bill with me now.
To confirm which
which one is
it,
D or
the B? Who can assist us? State law advisor, can you help us? How does it relate to the final thing? It's tagging. Is it tagging what? changes. Because what is it, a B version or D version?
Thank you, Chair. The bill that was sent to the province for consideration was B. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the provinces have considered B, and have proposed or have agreed to this amendment, which will make it then D.
Mm-hmm.
But it becomes D after it has been voted. These amendments and everything has been approved by the House. So, in other words, the committee secretary just to put it on record that what was considered in this meeting was the bill that was referred to the provinces. Mm-hmm.
Which was B. So we need to consider B now to agree on B.
You consider that B, Chairperson, and you have made these amendments, you have agreed to these amendments, that is C. And then those amendments are incorporated into what we call D. Yes, Chairperson.
We should be having one.
So the correction, when should it take place from these provinces? Because the concern is that the provinces have written on their mandate that is D.
Yeah,
the version is D.
Northwest.
Okay.
And Northern Cape.
They say B.
They say B.
Hmm? So how do we correct that? Can you help us think about it? Yes, Honorable Ranto.
Maybe Chairperson will ask the question that I was going to ask. And Chairperson, tell our control meeting, let us not all talk at the same time.
Okay.
And the I was also going to ask, as the state, the learned person say, the considered bill is B.
Mm-hmm.
So the provinces that have considered D, which they say, like this province, Yase Mpumalanga, they consider D bill. They haven't sent in a consideration
Gapi.
So what do we do as a committee?
Okay. Are you ready to respond to this? Before the question here.
Yeah, before you respond, if I got you well, when we took the bill to the provinces, it was a B because of the amendments that came from the NA. And when we instituted our own amendments, that was C. So for consideration today, we are correct in considering D version. That's what I wanted to confirm. But you will tell us.
Back to you.
Shepherd, without abrogating the responsibility of the committee secretary, Shepherd, you will see when you prepare a report or when you will read the report, you will say what you have considered in this committee. And that report, you are preparing that report for the House. That is for the NCOP. You will see, if she can read you that report, if she has prepared that report, you will see that you will say the Select Committee on Social Services having considered the National Health Amendment Bill, and it will say Bill B, have agreed to the bill with amendments, which then it becomes Bill C.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I want to contest what he is telling us. The provinces considered it be the first month.
Mm-hmm.
First bill that was presented to us was B, and then we changed it to KFC. And then the recent one, where the provinces are voting for, where my province, they sent a D without a signature, and sent back. The deal was considered by provinces in terms of the final mandate. But if there are provinces that says on B, it means it is the first, that is the first negotiating mandate. I want to disagree with him. Thanks.
Okay, state law advisor, can you help us in this question? Tell us, now that the provinces have considered the bill, which version are they supposed to put to put as provinces, preparing it to us?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, it's the first time, or it was in ordinary that we have done it this way, and we have done this way in order to protect, in order to assist the provinces. Normally, Chairperson, you don't get C and D sent to the provinces at this stage that you have done it. So we have done it this way in order to protect the service. What normally goes to the provinces after the negotiating mandate? It's normally a report of the minutes of the proceeding of the negotiating mandate meeting. It's normally just not the bill. Even the meeting itself, Chairperson, is saying it's still at the negotiation stage. You're negotiating. You will do some trade-offs during that time. Then you go back and report to the provinces. In your negotiating mandate, these are the points that have been considered, that have been agreed to by the community. But at this point, the other provinces could not move. Then, out of that report, or of those minutes of the committee, then the provinces formulate what we call a voting or a final mandate, saying, this is our final mandate on this particular bill. So, Chairperson, I'm saying, while the provinces have considered or supposed to consider whatever, it's bill B. But we have done it so we incorporated everything in C and D so that to assist the province to see what are the proposal amendments that they proposed would look like and all of that. But that was just informal purposes. I want to repeat it, that was informal purposes. We have done it this way to assist the provinces. The fact that was a negotiating meeting. There was nothing concrete out of that meeting. What is concrete is what comes out of this meeting, Chairperson. Because of the name itself, it says it's a final mandate meeting. So it's where the provinces finalize their mandate. So what was considered by the Chairperson, if I must be honest about that, by the provinces, it's been. What was sent to the provinces? Yes, the provinces proposed amendments. That is what is seen. That is what is formulated in the report. The report says it is self-service. Then those mandates, those amendments that is captured in C, then are incorporated into D. In other committees, you don't get that stage that D. You get that stage when for the first time when you go to the House. That's how you get the D and D. And that's what the House then votes on and then approves. Because it's got that bill in front of itself, the one that incorporates the amendment itself. But I repeat, Chairperson, what was sent to the provinces for consideration was B.
They agreed
to B with amendments, which then becomes C and D.
Now, there are these provinces that have been sent to
or should we take it back to them to do the correction, or it's not a major
issue, Chairperson. It can be changed and be in those things and that's been recorded.
Okay.
It can be changed and become a B.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes,
Chairperson, while I agree for the purposes of progress, that we take whichever, B or G, it really needs a thorough explanation to the provinces, because I remember last year when we had this type of a problem, my province, for instance, did not vote in the House because of the wrong version that was on the paper, on the final mandate. So you really need we don't want to be confused. Presently, I'm just agreeing for progress sake, but I'm really confused now, more than confused. If you say that will happen in the House when we debate that we agree to the D, that's where the confusion comes. But I agree we continue because of time and make sure that this is communicated well, because even our liaison officers fight with the provinces over the same thing. And you are saying it's a small thing, it's not a problem. Let's get the correct thing. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson in law,
there is no agri for progress. Legally, the bill that went through the provinces firstly was B. We debated here and debated here and debated here. It went back. You review those things. You put a C, you put a D. And then you took it back, the D, back to the provinces. Now you say it doesn't matter whether it's B or D. That is not what you're supposed to be doing. You can't say, okay, the one that are voting on D is correct, the one that are voting on B is correct. Because then what is it? If it means if we vote on B, we are voting for that one that was not corrected. And then what exactly? Those that are saying D is the one that was reviewed, and then they voted on them after checking that certain areas have been affected. So we are misleading us.
Chairperson, let us not do things here for the sake of progress. That should be final. If we have to reverse everything, let us reverse everything so that we get the final mandate of the right version here in front of us. Because if we are going to do this, and at the end of the day, when this bill becomes an act, and we find ourselves in trouble because of what we have done today, I think if we need to reverse this, let us reverse it. And we even last time asked, are we going to take, as delegates, are we going to take these mandates back, the amendments back to the provinces? And we agreed here that we are not going to take them back to the provinces as delegates and go and present a new bill in the provinces. The process will go on as it is supposed to be going on. So let us not agree here on progress. Let us agree on something that we need to do as this committee, and also as legal as possible as it can be. We're not running the country for the sake of progress. No, we are running the country according to the laws of this country. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think our colleague is absolutely right here. If we are doing things for the sake of progress, it must be done in terms of the law. When we received the C version, that was a negotiating mandate. Now we are at a stage where the negotiating mandate was considered, and provinces are now voting on the D version. We cannot say we are voting on the B version with amendments, because then which amendments are you talking about? So we must be very clear on which version we are voting on. And as KZN, we are very clear that we are voting on the D version of the bill. And that is the D version that will go to the NCOP to be accepted as the final. So that is what we are here for. And I think we are very clear on that as, you know, as KZN, that it is the D version of the bill. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Chair, you know, remember when we negotiated the first time on the deal, some of the provinces did not even propose amendments. They have just raised concerns. Some they just voted on B. But because some provinces have raised concerns and propose amendments, then we understood it as that we actually dealing with the same bill, the National Health Amendment Bill B24B. And then the amendments, well, I heard my learned friend saying when they put up amendments, they put it on C, to say these are the amendments, but you do not create a new bill. You amend the B bill, so it means you're not changing that. You're not actually taking away that B away. You're just putting amendments on the same bill, the B bill. Now, the B bill. After we have concluded run through the amendments as proposed by other provinces, then all of us negotiating and said, but this is okay. You're taking that bill as a G bill for vote in the House. But what are you voting for? You're still voting on that 24B bill as amended. That's how I understood it initially. But I said, oh, let me leave it. That's what I'm saying. In Northwest, we are voter on the spot to accept the bill with no amendments, actually. It just raised a concern. Western Cape just accepted the bill, like I said. But as an amendment, as the chairman, what is confusing here is whether a B bill is dead, because a C, now it comes to a light, we introduce another bill. Can't we? We're still dealing with the same bill with amendments.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I could just advise the members, the bill that is introduced in the NA is the A version of the bill. And then what the members in the NA then vote on is the A version of the bill with the A list. Now, the A list is a list of amendments proposed by those committee members. What then gets sent is the A list, or the members vote on the A list with the A bill, and that goes to the NA. And that gets the B bill is voted on in the NA, not in the committee, but in the NA, in the actual chamber, in the House. What then comes to the NCLP is the B bill. What then goes to the provinces for the negotiating mandate is the B bill plus the C list, which is the proposed amendments. That is what the provinces vote on. Once that is done, and then it comes to the select committee, the B bill and the C list, which are the proposed amendments from the different provinces. What then gets voted on in the chamber, in the NCLP chamber, is the D bill. The D bill is not voted on here in the select committee. It's the B bill with the C list of amendments or proposed amendments that is voted on. It's a B bill.
As long as it wasn't complicated. Yeah.
I don't see Northwest, but I'm seeing Gauteng is a B. Northern Cape is a B. Yeah, Northwest is a B. Northern Cape is a B. Gauteng is a B. It's Northwest. So what it means then is that only three provinces have voted on the correct B. The six ones have voted on the wrong B. Three on a B, and the others on D. Thanks.
Chairperson, the bill that went to the provinces, I assume, is the proposed D bill. Am I correct, Monobisi? Which is what the D bill would look like. Mm-hmm. That is not the final D bill. That is just what the D bill would look like when all the amendments are put in.
Informal.
It's informal. That is still the B bill, but it's just included. It's what the D bill would look like if all the NCLP amendments are put in. That's for ease of reference, just so that members can see this is what the ball is going to look like. It doesn't necessarily mean it is a D-ball. It's a proposed D-ball.
Okay. Can I request that in future, our legal office here in Parliament, when we have the kind of bill that we're faced with today, we have to explain all the processes and how it should be dealt with by here from our committee down to the provinces. So that we are not faced, it's the second time you remember, the education faced the same problem. So it means it's going to continue if we don't address it in that fashion. We need to deal with it this much and so that it doesn't repeat itself again. We delay the meeting, and I'm not giving you a platform, ma'am. And I'm making a ruling that we are going to accept the B version that has been submitted. But the issue that other provinces have dealt it in a D version, we are told by our legal experts here that it's not a major issue. It's not a major issue because it's still going to the House this week. When we write our report and tabling it before the House, we'll be able to explain all the technicalities and other details of the bill. Can you accept that, member? Please. Ryan Tosco is a class in APA teacher. Over to you, Ted. Over to you, Ranto.
I for one, as I'm reading SMS evela ku chairperson now of the province, he is as confused as I am now. That is why they did not send the final mandate from the province. So I for one, Eastern Cape is not going to vote on the bill. They are confused.
Now, Chairperson, when you wrap it, are you wrapping it in an understanding that Gauteng, Northern Cape, Northwest, three provinces? We're waiting here, you're counting us. That is were three, were four, were five for correcting. Now, as you say, we are wrapping it up. These are only three provinces that have voted on the correct version, according to the learned friends. And according to the confusion that might have gone into provinces, other provinces have voted on D. And these are minority in terms of nine provinces. You are counting us here to say we must be five, and then we can start the meeting. Now, the mandates are on the three provinces.
Okay, let me apologize to the minister and the social development for this delay. This is important discussion on the bill because we want to do things right here as a committee. Okay, can we do this? I don't know whether we won't be overlapping with on our time period of the bill. Will it delay us if we do it next week? We communicate the right message to the provinces.
Chairperson, you know, I remember my province did not vote because of the final negotiating mandate was a B instead of a D. I was the only one. And I feel that we need to get clarity, and even our liaison officers need to be clarified, because really what today is being said to us by the legal people is not what was said previously. That is why our members are unsatisfied, because this is a new thing. Previously it was very strict that if we take the bill back for amendment and see, when we do the final voting mandate, it should be D. So there's a need for them to go and reconcile and even maybe talk to our liaison officer so that the messages that are communicated to the provinces are correct and we have the final mandate. If we pass this now, others is B, others is D. I'm not a legal person, but I don't think that is correct. That is my advice, Chair.
Talk to the time frame.
The time frames, I don't know. This can be done. Pending the availability of the department, of course, because it's not their fault. It's our fault here in Parliament and how we are being given information. So maybe we can leave it for now. I don't think it would be fair to pass it really under the circumstances that we are in. Let's just postpone it, and then maybe we will communicate today later on and see how we can do it. The Department of Health has never given us a problem in terms of attending. We can always put a date. so that we finalize this. But we really need our legal people to go and consult and get things right, because they are confusing us. Thank you, Chair.
As it goes back to provinces, what we want to see is that provinces must bring it back in a vote as D or B.
But I long it, it might want a written, something written down which will explain to provinces exactly how to do this, this thing.
So the department will handle that process.
Legal
advice.
Yes.
Because we must be sure whether they're coming again with B or with the C.
That's why we have our legal person.
They have to consult one another.
Yes, ma'am.
Chairperson, today in the WIPAR, we raised this period of the bills that we are given. For the first time in the WIPAR, we were told that the 6 weeks, we must work within the 6 week period. But if we've got problems or we need to consider things, we may go beyond, we can go even to 6 months.
Okay. Thank you. So we will conclude this matter in that session, that we will go back to the provinces so that we with a written document that will explain exactly the process, how it is to be followed, and how to draft and structure the final version mandate that's supposed to come before us. We apologize to the department for this delay. You'll understand. You were here, you were listening. Thanks very much. Yes,
sorry, Chair, when can we expect that a directive to come from the legal people? So that
this
we
week, but maybe this afternoon or tomorrow morning early. Oh, you mean, yeah. Yeah, so from the office, yes. This afternoon or tomorrow morning, first thing tomorrow morning, you'll get it.
Thank you, ma'am.
Again, and the minister and your team minister. You've had a taste of another side of this committee. Minister, without any waste of time, I think I will take this opportunity to allow you and your team to table before us your annual report so that you can hear those promises that you have made at the beginning of the year there. And to what extent have you gone in terms of implementation? Over to you.
Chairperson and honorable members, I'm going to allow the acting DG to set the tone. Then we'll get a presentation, and then I'll come after questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Honorable Chair,
and members of the Select Committee. As Minister has indicated, my name is Wiseman Makasela. I am the Acting Director General of the Department of Social Development currently. We have with us here, as per your invitation, representatives from all units and programs of the Department of Social Development to be in a position to respond and answer any questions and queries that may arise from our report. We also have with us the Chief Executive Officer of SASA. Should there be any other related questions that may be about SASA? Now, what we're going to be presenting to yourselves here is really as per your request. This is about our annual performance to the year ending March 2012. And this is against the kind of objectives, it is against the kind of targets and indicators that we set ourselves to achieve at the beginning of the year 2011-2012. And we would like the presentation that we're making to be understood in the context of the 12 government outcomes that have been adopted by Cabinet and under which all work that is undertaken by departments happens. Now, I have with me here, as part of our senior management delegation from the department, Mr. Chris Mlaudzi, who is going to be taking us through the presentation. As you will see, the presentation that we are giving to you has five sections. Mr. Chris Mlaudzi will do the first four sections, which is sections A, B, C, and D, and that will be followed with a section specifically on finance, looking at spending trends and and other related matters. And that will be led by Mr. Johnny Modiba, who is our Acting Chief Financial Officer. With those few comments, Chair, I would like that we get to the meat of the story. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member and Minister and colleagues. The presentation is fairly long, so I'll, if you, with your permission, just to save time as well, I'll skip some of the things that I think can be done away with. So I'll be very fast also in my reading, and I hope you will bear with me. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. We start with a vision and mission, which are things that I cannot possibly go into because I don't think they are so important. But I would really like to also say some of the priorities that we have committed ourselves to, which are to expand child and youth care services through the ECVND program, for example, to promote early childhood development, to combat substance abuse, as well as the provision of food to poor households. We have the Food for All and Zero Hunger program. As well as the protection and promotion of the rights of older people and those with people with disabilities. The 12 government outcomes to which we also contribute are also stated there. I will not go through them as I believe they are fairly well known. This slide actually talks to the five programs that we have, administration, social assistance, social security policy and administration, program 4, welfare services, as well as program 5, which deals with social policy and integrated service delivery. We move now to Program B, which is Slide 8. The purpose of obviously, just to brief, which the Acting DG has already alluded to, so I will not repeat that. Just by way of context, we are now on Slide 10. We deliver our services in an environment marked by high levels of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. And although the department is largely responsible for policy formulation, it also renders some of its services directly to the public. For example, the registration of non-profit organizations. The department also works with other institutions within and outside government in the execution of its mandate. Critical partners include amongst others, the departments of basic education, labor, justice, health, and rural development. Areas of collaboration include critical projects on issues affecting children, HIV and AIDS, older persons, victim empowerment, youth, and social security. And given the collaborative and interdependent nature of some of the department's work, it can only meet some of its targets if other institutions deliver on their commitments as well. We also reprioritize our programs or projects during the financial year. So in some instances, we have to defer the implementation of some of our targets in light of new agent priorities. This would include examples of this would, for example, include the hosting of the ECD conference in March, which led to the dedication of funds to the event. And the ECD conference, it's worth noting, adopted concrete policy proposals on how we need to improve the provision of ECD services. We now move to slides 12, 13, that we talk directly to our achievements against targets. In order to contribute to the government-wide outcome of a long and healthy life for all South Africans, as well as our own income, which is to reduce income vulnerability, our own outcome, which is to reduce income vulnerability by expanding the social safety net, we expanded the social safety net to about 15.9 recipients, and 10.9 million of these were recipients of the child support grant, while 2.7 of them were recipients of the old age grant. We also completed an impact study of the child support grant, which confirmed that the CSG reduces poverty and vulnerability and improves the academic performance of its recipients. Similarly, adolescent recipients of the CSG are less likely to engage in risky behavior as well. We would like to now to move to the issue. We had also sought to develop a draft policy and legislation of mandatory retirement, death and disability benefits and consultations. We came up with a consolidated policy proposal which was approved by the Interministerial Committee and presented to the Social Protection and Community Development Cluster Cabinet Committee. We had also sought to approve regulations or to ensure that regulations giving effect to the Social Assistance Act were promulgated and implemented. In that respect, these regulations were actually published and implemented. This will contribute to the DFD, our own outcome of social security policy coherence through a single department, as well as decent employment through inclusive growth, which is the government-wide outcome. That is now under Program 3, Social Security Policy and Administration. We had also sought to increase the number of scholarships awarded to social work students by 30%. In that respect, we gave 918 social work scholarships, or we awarded 918 social work scholarships as follows: Western Cape 96, Northern Cape 25, Northwest 70, Eastern Cape 227, Limpopo 295 students, KwaZulu-Natal 117, First State 29, while Gauteng there was none. This represents about 23.4% of the target. And the number of scholarships awarded depends also on the number of applicants and the number of students accepted by relevant tertiary institutions. We have sought to ensure that 9 provinces implement the social welfare services framework. In that respect, about 932 social service practitioners in 8 provinces were capacitated on the social welfare service framework, except the Western Cape. A draft plan for implementing the framework was developed, while generic intervention processes were implemented in the Limpopo province. We had also sought to develop and approve a national implementation plan for the policy on financial awards to service providers. In that respect, an implementation plan for the policy on financial awards was developed and presented to the Welfare Services Forum, HSVS, and MINMEC, and was approved. We have sought also to hold consultative sessions on the policy on financial awards to service providers. The policy was discussed with line function directors in the department and taken through national consultations. The policy and the approved implementation plan and the NPO financing guidelines were discussed with provincial officials and representatives of NPOs in 7 provinces. Inputs and comments were consolidated and the policy document was refined. We now move to older persons, which is under social welfare services as well. In order to create an environment that enables the protection and promotion of older persons' rights, we have sought to ensure that 100 new elder abuse cases were reported to social workers. In that respect, 273 such cases were reported and processed in all provinces. We also had awareness campaigns in KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and the Western Cape provinces. 210 social service professionals were trained on the management of elder abuse in all 9 provinces as well, while 412 residential facilities were provisionally registered in terms of the norms and standards for residential facilities in all provinces. We move now to the critical area of substance abuse, which is slide 19. We had stopped, in order to meet the outcome of reducing incidence of substance abuse in all our communities and ensure that all people in South Africa are and feel safe, we have sought to roll out the campaign on anti-drugs and substance abuse in all provinces. In that respect, we achieved the following. The national anti-drugs campaign was rolled out in all 9 provinces. This is to create awareness of substance abuse and its dangerous side effects, such as mental impairment and loss of life. Regulations under the Prevention and Treatment for Substance Abuse Act were finalized and gazetted for public comment. An integrated program of action to fight alcohol and substance abuse was also developed and approved. We continued as well as the department to provide technical support to the Interministerial Committee on Substance Abuse, which proposed that the age limit for alcohol and substance abuse be raised from 18 to 21 years of age, and that Shebeen Senior Schools, ECD Early Childhood Development Centers, and places of worship be closed. We now move to slide 20, which deals with just the critical issue of children. Our outcome in that respect is to improve access to early childhood development, which also ties in with the government outcome of a quality basic education. In that respect, we have sought to realize a 10% increase in the number of children between 0 to 5 years old accessing ECD services per annum. In that respect, the number of children accessing ECD services and programs increased by 26.5%, that is 209,000, bringing to over 900,000 the total number of children benefiting from ECD services in all provinces. We have sought to register 2,000 new children abused, neglected, and exploited cases on the Child Protection Register, that is Part A of it. In that respect, 2,344 cases of abuse were processed on the Child Protection Register, Part A, while over 11,000 employees were screened on Part B of the Child Protection Register as well. We also developed guidelines on prevention and early intervention. In order to ensure a safe and friendly society for children, we had sought to increase the number of children accessing adoption services. In that respect, about 65%, there was a 65% increase, that is 1,620 adoptions were registered nationally, there was a 49% increase, that is 7,272 children accessing child and youth care centers in all provinces. There also was quite a massive increase, that is 641% increase, that is which represents 265,000 children accessing drop-in centers in all provinces. We have sought to finalize the implementation plan to monitor the implementation of the Children's Act. In that respect, we finalized the Implementation Act with indicators, and all 9 provinces submitted quarterly progress reports in that respect. We are moving now to the issue of social crime prevention and victim empowerment, which is slide 23. This seeks to contribute to the government outcome of ensuring that all people in South Africa are and feel safe, as well as ensuring that SDSD will have a reduced incidence of social crime in the country. We have sought to extend training to 600 service providers on the following. First, on the diversion accreditation systems, norms and standards for secure care, as well as the implementation of social crime prevention programs. In that respect, we hit the target, we exceeded the target, and ensured that 815 practitioners and service providers were trained in all 9 provinces. With respect to the monitoring of the implementation of the policy framework for the accreditation of diversion services, we did the diversion, provided diversion, accreditation was done in all 9 provinces, while 345 assessments were also carried out. 55 service providers and 191 programs received full accreditation. 44 provincial coordinators were trained to conduct quality assurance in respect of providers and programs in all 3 categories mentioned earlier, in all 9 provinces as well. we have started to train 9 provinces, all provinces, and 200 service providers on the issue of human trafficking. In that respect, we had 1 national and 9 provincial workshops, and 220 service providers were trained on the issue of human trafficking. With respect to developing draft regulations on human trafficking, on the human trafficking bill, the regulations on human trafficking bill and forms were drafted. Vetting of victim support services, the policy guidelines for victim empowerment were also vetted. We now move to families. And through this program, we also contribute to government outcome, which is the sustainable human settlements and improved quality of household life, as well as the VFC-specific outcome, which is the restored family values and responsibility in order to build cohesive communities. The Green Paper, we had consultations on the Green Paper on families. In that respect, the Green Paper was discussed with MINMEC and various clusters, and it was gazetted in October 2011 for public comment. Consultative workshops were also held in 9 provinces in February and March 2012. We also ensured that the integrated parenting framework was approved, while the manual on mediation services was also approved. We have sought to conduct research on the effectiveness of services to families. The research was conducted in the Eastern Cape, Western Cape, Northern Cape, Northwest, and Mpumalanga, and a preliminary research report was completed as well. We now move to youth. Through our services to youth, we seek to contribute to the government outcome of vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities, contribute towards food security for all, as well as to ensure that youth participate in and influence social change. In that respect, we have sought to ensure that 1,300 youth would be participating in the Masupa Youth Pioneer Program. In that respect, 1,325 youth participated in the Masupa Youth Pioneer Program in Limpopo provinces, in Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, and Northwest provinces. We had also sought to conduct 4 outreach programs. We conducted 7 as follows. We had a Youth Day seminar in the Free State and Northern Cape, Youth Day commemoration in Gauteng, as well as International Youth Day commemoration in Northwest, a youth walk against drug abuse and taking GSD to communities in KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga in Limpopo. We had sought to ensure that 1,800 youth would participate in the National Youth Service. In that respect, over 2,400 youth participated in the National Youth Services in Mpumalanga, Free State, Northwest, Gauteng, and Northern Cape. We move now to slide 27, HIV and AIDS. Our contribution is towards the government outcome of ensuring a long and healthy life for all South Africans, as well as to reduce the psychosocial impact of HIV and AIDS and other chronic illnesses on the South African population. We have sought to reach about 50,000 households through our HIV/AIDS prevention program. We reached over 475,000 vulnerable households through our programs in 8 provinces, in all provinces except the Free State. We also reached over 2 million youth through HIV/AIDS prevention programs in 9 provinces. So these are programs that are usually run through Love Life, the NGO called Love Life. Over 631,000 children also supported. While we held community conversations in 7 provinces, except the Free State and Northwest. We continue under HIV and AIDS. We have sought to train 207 social service professionals on HIV and AIDS counseling, and we reached 584 such professionals in all 9 provinces. The draft framework for HIV and AIDS social and behavior change was also completed. We now move to Program 5, Social Policy Research and Development. We seek to contribute which is an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service and an empowered, fair, and inclusive citizenship. Our DSD outcome in that respect also is to realize the deepening of social policy discourse and evidence-based policy making in the current and the impact of the we have sought to train with city social policymakers. In that respect, city such policymakers were trained in social policy and social policy analysis. We have sought to develop a research coordination management strategy. The strategy was developed, but although it was not presented to the relevant approval committees for approval. We, through our social policy program, we also contributed towards the completion of the green paper on families, which, as I said earlier, was completed and presented. We move now to special projects, which through which we seek to contribute to an increased decent work opportunities, skills and income levels in the community, as well as the realization of decent employment through inclusive economic growth, which is a government-wide outcome. We have sought to create about 132 job opportunities through the expanded public works program and newly integrated social sector staff programs as well. In that respect, the social sector facilitated the creation of 152,000 job opportunities in all provinces, which is above the target, almost like 20, which beats the target by about 20,000. We move to the issue of population policy promotion. We have sought to conduct follow-up research report on HIV and AIDS and other key health concerns with demographic consequences. The report on HIV and AIDS and other health consequences concerns with demographic consequences was completed in March 2012. We conducted 32 training sessions, which were attended by 732 participants from all 9 provinces, with emphasis on the issue of rural nodes. We also conducted an evaluation of the training course on population issues. Also, we had sought to ensure that a learner workbook and teacher guides were developed as tools for introducing population factors into the school curriculum. In that respect, the workbook and guide were completed, edited, and reviewed in collaboration with experts from the Department of Basic Education, ensuring the integration of themes on various population concerns, including adolescents, sexual and reproductive health. We have also sought to conduct capacity building and training workshops in provinces and urban nodes. We had technical support. We provided technical support on key issues to be considered when integrated gender into local integrated development plans. And 6 advocacy workshops were held, and promotional and educational material were exhibited. Workshops, reports, evaluation forms, and attendance registers were also produced. A research dissemination and gender workshop for various stakeholders was held in Dundee in February 2012 as well. With respect to the registration and monitoring of NPOs, we have sought to capacitate 600 NPOs on the NPO Act and governance. In that respect, 1,323 NPOs attended 32 workshops in the Free State and Northwest provinces. 144 officials were capacitated on the Act and on the NPO Act and governance in the Eastern Cape, Free State, and the Free State provinces in a number of districts in those two provinces. We had also sought to hold consultations and finalize the revised codes or the standards and protocol guide on NPO governance. In that respect, we held a 2-day workshop to review and discuss the codes. With respect to, we have sought to process 80% of all NPO applications for registration within 2 months. That is, and we hit that. We actually exceeded the target and ensured that 95% processed all 95% of applications within 2 months. We have sought to increase the issuing of notices by 10%, and 85% of NPOs whose reports were due were served with non-compliance notices in that respect. The development and testing of online NPO registration. We only appointed programmers to work on the online NPO online registration system during the period under review. We are now on slide 35, community development. We have sought to conduct 9 community outreach programs, taking DSG communities amongst them, and we reached about 18 communities through the Taking DSG Communities campaign in October month in all provinces except the Western Cape. We have sought to profile about 1,500 communities, and in respect, we profiled 2,520 communities nationally, while over 224,000 households were profiled as well. According to the NISIS, we had about 500. 196 clients referred to different departments for appropriate interventions. We have sought to develop guidelines on the elimination of hunger. The new strategy on zero hunger was developed, while over a million people benefited from our food security programs in all provinces. The guidelines for community mobilization were developed and approved as well. Honourable members, concludes Part B, and we now move to the critical issue of international obligations, which will be slide 40. We, in order to contribute to realize the government outcome of creating a better South Africa, a better Africa, and a better world, we also work in support of South Africa's foreign policy goals, and we play an important role in promoting the country's social development agenda across the globe. We remain an active member of the African Union, Southern African Development Community, United Nations structures, and United Nations structures, which includes, amongst others, the UN Commission on the Status of Women and the UN Commission on Narcotics. During the reporting period, the Department continued to participate in international social security association activities, including strengthening the ISA offices in Africa. We also participated in the Millennium Development Goals Review meetings hosted by the African Union and the UN Economic Commission for Africa in March. We also participated in the UN Commission for Social Development and the UN Commission on Gender, Population Development, Crime Prevention and Substance Abuse. We continued our cooperation with the UN with the UN on issues of child trafficking and bilateral and also offered bilateral support to the new Republic of South Sudan. We actively participated in the activities of the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, and the International Social Security Association, ISA. The Department facilitated technical exchanges with 17 countries, including amongst others, Mauritius, Ghana, Lesotho, Zimbabwe, Kenya, Mexico, Brazil, the United States, and Canada. We hosted a Partners in Population meeting in South Africa and continue to serve on its budget committee. All these initiatives provide a platform for sharing social development experiences and provide us with an opportunity to help a better South Africa, a better Africa, and a better world. We have challenges as well in the execution of our mandate, and we would like to continue from slide 14 to talk briefly about those. The department achieved 54% of its planned targets, while the remainder that is were either partial achieved, that is 26%, or not achieved at all, that is only 20%. I would just like to elaborate a bit on the 26% that is considered partially achieved. What happens is during at the time of auditing, when the Auditor General audited our books, there were instances where sufficient information, supporting documents were not available, and were made available to us by our partners, such as the provinces, after the audit had been concluded. And this information, when it became available, was at a time that it was not possible for us to reverse and rewrite the annual report, or to that would require another audit, and which is not quite according to law. So reasons for non-achievement of targets also include, for example, the reprioritization of projects and the dependence on other institutions, such as provinces and other government departments, in the delivery of some of our mandate activities. In some instances, we had to defer the implementation of some of our targets in light of new urgent priorities, which include the ECD conference that I mentioned earlier, as well as the establishment of a social workers veteran forum. We also had to, for example, the minister recommended that the amendments to the SASA bill be deferred to the 2012-2013 financial year for further consultation in order to allow further consultation with relevant stakeholders. Some of the reasons for non-achievement of targets which were beyond the department control, which were beyond our control, include the following. We could only adjudicate 37% instead of the planned 80% of the appeals placed with us within 90 days of receipt due to delays in receiving appropriate records from appellants and or the SASA registry. We only adjudicated over 11,000 appeals backlog of the planned 20,000 due to the fact that some of the records, over 18,000 such, were either incomplete, while some were duplicates of appeals that had already been finalized, or grant applications, or as a result of grant application files that were missing. We also sought to create, to form, we established a unit tasked with, with establishing an inspectorate for social security. However, it was hampered by a lack of, its work was hampered by lack of human resources in some instances. However, an organizational structure for the inspectorate, as well as the human resources model to support the establishment of the inspectorate, have been approved by the minister, while additional resources have been allocated to gather the evidence and put all the necessary systems in place. Lack of provincial capacity is also one of our challenges. The registration of partial care and ECD facilities could not be completed due to a lack of capacity in provinces, delays in reporting, especially in the HIV, in the areas of HIV and AIDS. The reprioritization, which I mentioned earlier, was that in order to increase the coverage and quality of ECD services, the department has to host the ECD conference in March, which led to shifting of funds from other critical priorities. The budget for training of caregivers on HIV and AIDS counseling was redirected to train social service professionals due to high demand for such services like training. As a result, we could only train 485 of the targeted 610 social professionals. With respect to interdepartmental collaboration, the provision of psychosocial support for the school health program could not be implemented since the project is primarily driven by the Department of Health. The department could not compile the National Household Profile Report due to provinces not being in a position to access the National Integrated Social Information System, also known as NISIS. And although the Community Development Framework was approved by the Social Protection and Community Development Cluster, it is still pending approval by MINMEC. We move now to Part D, legislative programs. No bills were submitted to Parliament during the year under review. With that, honourable members, I conclude my presentation and hand over to my colleague.
Good morning, honourable members. Good morning, Minister. I'm going to cover the finance part of the presentation. An approach that is being followed this year compared to prior is that we tried by all means to focus on provincial finances. We'll cover the national office and then just focus briefly on the provincial figures as requested also in the prior presentation, and also look at the outcome in terms of the sector audit that was conducted by the Auditor General of South Africa. The presentation on this part will cover the actual expenditure for the year under review 2011-12. It will also cover the expenditure trends in the provinces, the various provinces, the challenges, and then the audit outcome for the sector. We're looking at the various provinces, including the two agencies, NDA and SASA. And then we look at the commitments that we're making as the sector to address those challenges that we're facing. The first part in terms of that is actually the national expenditure for 2012, for 2011-12. As you can see, you will have a final appropriation of 104 billion in that particular year, and then the actual expenditure 103 billion, and that 103 is actually under expenditure of about 1.1%. However, that is, you know, translating because of the magnitude of the figures, is translating to 1.4 billion due to the underspending on social assistance. And then the next slide shows the actual figures per program in terms of the final appropriation and also the actual amounts that have been actually spent during that financial year. And as you can see under Program 2, that is just 1.1 billion that was actually underspent on social assistance. And then the next highest is the 8 million on Social Security Policy Administration, which relates to certain projects under the appeals, like the MIS, that were not undertaken during that financial year. The reasons, other reasons for underspending, the other reasons for underspending in terms of Program 2 relates to the lower intake in terms of beneficiaries, and then also the fact that SASA undertook a project of verifying beneficiaries, and that to a certain extent resulted in the lower under expenditure during the financial year. The others that I haven't covered is on Program 4. It relates to transfers to NGOs that could not be made by the year end due to non-compliance matters that the NGO could not comply to, like, for instance, service level agreements and so on. But however, we requested rollover funds to cover those expenditure in the next financial year. In terms of the economic classification, you can see the allocation of transfers and subsidies, which is the bulk of the transfers to SASA. is 103 billion, and that under expenditure also variance of 1.1 billion, and then the rest is basically compensation of employees, goods and services, as well as the payments of capital assets. I'm going to follow the same approach that Chris has followed, Chairperson, if I'm allowed to do so, because the next slides, up to 10 slides, are actually the details of this high-level summary. So we'll go straight to slide 68, which is basically the provincial part. Okay. In terms of the provincial expenditure, we got a special request to indicate the budget allocated to the provinces last year, and we thought we should then reflect that. For this financial year under review, the total allocation for the provinces was 11.7 billion in total. And as you can see in terms of the pie chart, Gauteng is getting 21% of that, followed by KZN, 17%, the lowest being Northern Cape at 4%. And the next slide shows the bar chart in terms of the budget versus the expenditure per province. In all the provinces, you can see the budget and the actual expenditure is more or less the same, with the exception of Gauteng province. And Gauteng province actually underspent by about 99 million, which is basically translating to 95% in terms of the budget that has been allocated to Gauteng. That is because of the fact that Gauteng province, Department of Social Development and Department of Health were merged together. So the funding for health was actually the ones that was actually utilized. They were using one account, resulting in social development underspending in terms of certain transactions for that province. So, however, from the 1st of April this year, the split has been actually done to ensure that the two are separate. Okay, in terms of the program, the speed in the province's pay program, you will see the majority of the allocated funds is 70% goes to social welfare services, and then followed by the admin budget of 19%, and then 11% on research and development. And then the tabular format, you can see the welfare, social welfare services spending on 98.99%, and then research development 96.90%, and then the admin budget 97.56%. And then in terms of the summary, in terms of the figures that are supporting those charts, you can see the figures, the 8 billion in terms of the voted funds for social welfare services, and then the actual expenditure of 8.1 billion. Okay, the economic classification, and I think this is an important slide, looking at especially the what is basically the allocation in terms of economic classification in the provinces, the majority goes to the transfers. That is basically transfers to NPOs and so on at 40%, and followed by the compensation of employees, and then the goods and services. And small amount just for capital expenditure. And then that's basically in tabular format, basically the economic classification relation to that, with transfers to NPOs that spent at 98.5%, and compensation of employees, personnel, actually the budget was overspent by about 0.26%. And that's because of the fact that most provinces wanted to absorb, or they actually absorbed social workers, you know, to try and address service delivery issues in the various provinces, even though some of them were not in a position to absorb the social workers, so they overspend a little bit in terms of the budget on personnel. And then that's basically in terms of the figures relating to the same information that I spoke to. Expenditure trends per province since 2008-09 up to 2011-12, you know, you can see that on average there was an increase in the budget allocation of about 9.5% per year, now sitting at 11.6 billion. And then you can see that the allocation per province, the ones highlighted in the yellow, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, are the ones, if we analyze, we actually received the highest increases since 2008 up to 2011-12. And then allocation per program also from 2008-09, you know, showing an increase in the trends relating to, you know, social all those programs, like for instance administration, social welfare services, research and development. The last program, special programs, is only in the northwest. It's only in the northwest, which basically it's not a mandate of the Department of Social Development. It was just a special arrangement in the province to have the budget for the Department of Women, Children, and People with Disabilities in the Social Development Northwest. So the 4 million is basic, or the actually in 2011-12 is the 6.8 million. It's actually there, but it's only applicable to Northwest. Okay, this chart shows 2013-14, sorry about that. And it shows that in terms of the allocation between between compensation of employees and transfers, it shows an increase in the compensation of employees, you know, at 41%, and then and transfers going down a little bit, 38%. And that is because of the same reason I provided, that, you know, there's an increase in the absorption of social workers, an attempt to get the absorption or social work graduates absorbed into the structure. And then this only mainly shows that the biggest amounts in terms of the economic classifications are going to compensation of employees at 4.5 billion, and then also the non-profit organization, 4.3 billion. Chairperson, I'm also going to skip from here. Because this is basically just a detailed, in terms of the high-level summary that I provided for the interest of time. So I will then suggest that we go straight, but I can always come back to explain if maybe there's a question. We go straight to slide 108, which is basically the overall challenges in the provinces that they have been experiencing during the year under review. Slide 108, the major challenge that we're experiencing is that over a period of time there has been a slight decrease in the MTF baseline allocations from the provincial departments, in fact, treasuries, from the provincial treasuries. And then there has been insufficient funds, you know, to fund the absorption of social graduates and then the filling of other critical posts in the provinces. And then there was an inability to actually, you know, fund additional NPOs, especially newly established NPOs, to ensure that the increase in the service coverage is actually done. But then because of the lack of funding relating to the NPOs relating to the new NPOs that we can fund. And then also the major problem in terms of the NPOs is that you know find that most of the time service level agreements are not signed by the relevant NPOs, or there's no compliance matters relating to certain, you know, issues that need to be complied to in terms of the service level agreement in instances where it is completed, resulting in delays to those transfers to those NPOs. Now, in terms of the outcome of the audit for the sector as a whole, and I'm not going to explain what was the purpose of the audit, I'm just going to jump that, but in terms of the outcome of the sector audit is that the Auditor General for all the provinces, and including the NDA SASA, focused, actually except for the SASA, if they focused on the audit of financial statements, audit of, you know, predetermined objectives, and then they focused on also the audit of compliance with laws and regulations, and the last one is this focus on the sector-specific service delivery focus areas. And that focus areas covered four main areas, which is basically the management of transfers to NPOs, the extended public works program in terms of the incentive grants, and then the monitoring of certain key service delivery programs like HIV and AIDS, child care, protection services, older persons, and then crime prevention and support, and then the last one being availability of social workers to communities. It must be noted that only the first item in terms of the first bullet results in an audit opinion, but the rest is basically conclusions regarding how the auditors feel about the outcome of the audit. So in terms, if we receive negative audit opinions, we'll be mainly on the first bullet only at this stage. Okay, the provinces, including national and NDA, and in the year under review, there has been an improvement from 2010-11, also in the previous financial year, 9-10, in that only two, you know, provinces were qualified. This is the Northwest and Gauteng Province. were qualified, but then 10 of the rest of those provinces, 10, were actually unqualified, including our two agencies. And then this is an improvement from last year where we had four qualifications, which was Northwest Limpopo, National Department of Social Development, as well as the Gauteng province. And then in terms of the spending, the auditors felt that the level of spending is acceptable, except for the two unauthorized expenditure coming from the previous year, which were on the Free State and Northwest, in terms of unauthorized expenditure coming from 2010-11. And then in terms of the irregular expenditure, the Auditor General felt that there were three main areas of irregular expenditure. The majority related to supply chain management related items, whereby, you know, for 2011-12, 351 million was actually regarded as irregular in terms of supply chain management processes not being followed. And that is basically the majority in the Northwest at 228 million. And then the second category being the compensation of employees in terms of the not following the public service regulations and resulting in an amount of 5.6 million. But it must be noted that there has been an improvement in that the previous year was 49 million. And then the other irregularities related mainly to KZN, where in 62 million, where basically there were contracts that were continuing without the formal process being in place in terms of the contracts and, you know, the service level agreement signed and so on and so forth, and as well as non-transfers to NPO. So this was non-transfers to non-adherence to the NPO Act in terms of the transfers to the NPO at about 40 million. So 62, in total 62 million, but 40 million of that is related to the non-transfers to NPO, and then the 20 million relates to those contracts that could not be formalized. Okay, in terms of the second category of audit is the audit on predetermined objective. In this area, it should be noted that 4 out of the 10 as excluded agencies here, because at this stage they are not subjected to audit on predetermined objectives, only the province, only the departments. So 4 out of the 10 actually received a clean outcome in terms of audit on predetermined objectives. That is Free Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Northern Cape, as well as the National Department. The reason for, you know, negative audit outcome is that the targets are not meeting the SMART criteria, and then the actual performance is not relevant, complete, and the data that is used to record is not accurately recorded and captured. In terms of the conclusions that the Auditor General reached on predetermined objective, you can see that Northern Cape is the one that has received unqualified audit opinion for 3 successive years, 2009-10, 2011-12. And then that is basically followed by the Eastern Cape, which has improved from adverse to unqualified. And then Limpopo also improved from disclaimer to adverse to unqualified. And then National actually regressed from unqualified to adverse, but then they improved in the current gender review to unqualified. Unfortunately, Free State is the one, 3 years in a row, they've received a disclaimer. Okay. And then the other province that they regressed is Gauteng, and then also Western Cape. In terms of focus areas on procurement and contract management, there was regression in 3 main areas. There was a limitation of scope whereby the auditors cannot find documentation to audit awards of tenders, for instance, in one of the 9 10 provinces. That's the first chart there. And then the auditors found that there were awards made to officials and close family members. And then also there was areas that, you know, were found where there were uncompetitive or bidding processes that were undertaken. The other areas were actual improvements. And then in terms of HR, there were issues relating to appointment processes where the verification of like, for instance, qualifications was not done in terms of appointment processes. That has regressed. Management of vacancies, most provinces had long percentages in terms of, or high percentages in terms of vacancies. And then acting positions more than 6 months in terms of the number of provinces. Then investigations, Gauteng in terms of the 3 areas, supply chain management related investigation, fraud and other financial misconduct. KZN on financial misconduct relating to the 2 contracts in terms of that those that were not formalized, security and catering. Western Cape also is basically facing financial misconduct investigations. This one are the four key focus areas, and I'm going to wrap up from here. This slide focuses on the NPOs in terms of the findings per province on the objectives relating to whether payments made to NPOs were made in accordance with the requirements of the PFMA, treasury regulations, and service contracts that has been concluded with these NPOs. And the auditors felt that there were a number of areas that were actually negative in terms of the provinces. Like, for instance, it was felt that the department did not have adequate capacity in place internally to manage the related NPO function. And then based on the visits that they undertook to the NPOs, they found that the building does not have first aid kit. And then the payments made to the NPOs were made before the contract is signed. Payments to the NPOs were made were not made in accordance with the service that is in place, service level agreement that is in place. Okay. I think I'm just going to skip the rest of those. And then the other area was on the extended public works service grant in terms of the provinces. Only one item was raised there, which relates to two provinces, Gauteng, Limpopo, not providing the necessary business plans. Older persons, three findings in terms of the auditors could not verify whether older persons accessing community-based care and support services, they could not verify the results in terms of the number of older persons accessing those services. And then the other two findings in terms of abuse. And then active aging programs. And then ECD couldn't verify the number of children participating there, and abuses as well. Just to name a few, prevention and support. They couldn't, like for instance, verify the number of children in conflict with the law. HIV and AIDS, for instance, they couldn't verify the number of infants and children that are made vulnerable by HIV and AIDS, that basically receiving services. Availability of social workers are charged on this one to say that there's a challenge in terms of absorption of social workers, so the vacancy rate is quite high. And then we came up with a number of commitments with the acting DG signed off, that we made as a sector, with eight head of departments signing off on behalf of the sector to say that we're committing to basically address the issues that the auditors have actually raised. And this mainly relates to completion of the audit action plans, which will be monitored at the sector level at HSDS meetings, and then including the CFO forums and various other forums that we have in the department. So these commitments will be signed off and then it will be monitored on a periodic basis. That's basically the summary in terms of the way forward in terms of the audit outcome. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thanks very much, Minister, and your team on the presentation. I believe that is the last part of the presentation. Thanks very much. Let me take this opportunity, Minister, to thank the department for the very comprehensive and detailed presentation, which has also given us a clear breakdown as the provinces in terms of your achievements that you have made and the targets you have set yourselves. We really appreciate also the general increase on the targets the department has set itself and the achievements made as a result of that. At this stage, let me take the opportunity to call on my colleagues make comments, questions, and everything you know, discussions on the matter. Okay, let me start from the end. Honorable Mugunyane, then followed by Flaky, followed by Honorable Ranto, and the Whip here. Oh, I thought you raised it. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Firstly, I wish to thank the Minister for being here in the flesh. There's one thing I had, because I take it that the promotion of sustainable livelihoods is one of the actually the targets. It's actually a very integral part of the mandate of government. It says decent jobs and sustainable livelihoods. And then And I thought that maybe this department was the one to play a very, very important role in terms of building up the issue of sustainable livelihoods. But I don't see that being mentioned anyway in the annual report. Or as if the philosophy of sustainable livelihoods that does not seem to have caught fire anyway in the department. I don't know if I'm wrong somewhere. Maybe if you can just be enlightened on that. And then the other thing, I don't know whether it's overachievement or under-targeting. Because it seems that in almost all the... I was just trying to look at all the slides where it appears. Okay, so just randomly, on slide number 36, you said you are going to profile 1,500 communities, and then but you've managed 2,520. You're going to profile 200,000 households, you've managed 224,000. And then you can go on, it appears on a lot of slides. But then, I was just wondering whether you had not sort of under-targeted rather than overachieved on those. And then, but the other thing is, what is the effect on the budget? Because sometimes, the number of units that you manage, usually you take your target and then you budget for that target. And then, but now, if you overachieve by 600 and something percent, then it may have a very serious impact on the budget. Okay, I think.
Chair, mine itself, it's on the, I would want to start from the last part, on the finances, the last part, but to appreciate as well, not the improvement in terms of putting up targets and trying very hard to achieve them. So I appreciate the report very much. But what I want to check with the department is on the... On my own, I just put 112 on the slide because the slide is not numbered, but it's on the... I know it's about the provinces that does not want to move or improve in terms of making sure that they want to achieve a clean audit. So it's on the slide 112. So what I want to check with the department, because I have seen one number of provinces, some they regress going back, some they stay the same for more than 3 years. So what I want to check with the department, what are the, how can I put this, the consequences that we put in place to ensure that departments shake up, they move and improve so that department at least move towards the clean audit. That's the first question. And the issue supply chain, I know it's not only the issue for this department. Many departments, when you look at the Auditor General, I was at one stage chair, I asked myself whether the Auditor General audits supply chain. Because all the department raised one thing, which is the problem. Supply chain. But what I want to check with the department, I can see most of the province, it means to me, it's where they open up a hole and begin to make all those irregular things through the process. Does the department have a plan, a perfect plan, not perfect, a plan to make sure that it closes up the problems that is there? Because almost if you look at the finances, the report, or the accountability, there is problems with supply chain. So I just want to find out whether is there any attempt by the department to ensure that this problem is addressed and permanently. At one stage, I have asked the other department, why are they not having a supply chain manager? Because you will find that the department is operating. They've got the supply chain processes, but there's nobody who's accountable to their processes. Why is it so? So how are you going to assist in that regard, to make sure that you actually address this problem. Honorable Mokoyan have raised the target issues. I want to skip. Chair, this one I want just to raise it. It's from my observation, and if it's my minister, it's my. This one is my personal thing. I have seen it. That there are programs that are established in communities. I want to speak specifically with the one I've seen in the Tobotline municipality in the northwest, where the dropping center was in operation for many years. It was funded by social development. All of a sudden, they cut the funding in the dropping center and soup kitchen. After cutting the funding to this poor project, which, if you can even visit, is still operational, is functioning. They source funds elsewhere. They are operating their soup kitchen perfectly again and the dropping center. Now the municipality gets in again, want to close the same poor center. When you go around there, people are running around asking themselves questions. They come to me, some I call the chairperson of the committee, because I don't see logic when there is a program, a soup kitchen, and a dropping center which is operating, then we want to close it. I ask people who've got interest in closing that center, what is the problem? They said they want to create a creche, early learning center there. But I said the space is too big. You can create both the early learning center and the soup kitchen as well, including all those things, the vegetable garden. Properly fenced, there's vegetables there, but there are people who are going all out on, I am saying, on political will to want to close these things. How are you helping those centers which I see that are vulnerable to this attack? And I wanted to raise that question as my last question. No, the last question is on Shebin. But I want to check on Shebin. To me, it's a good thing. But the problem with me, when I look at it, that closing Shebin next to school, next to church, next to the churches, it's a good thing. But I start with a dilemma, where the Shebin was long been there, then the school was erected maybe recently next to the same Shebin. What is a recourse? How do you move a Shebin? Do you just demolish, as I see some Tengi DP putting up a ganda, or are you saying, look, we want to move you here, we're taking you to another place, and then this is what we're going to give you to reestablish your business? Because to me, this business are business that should profit and put food on the other people's table. So that's what I wanted to check with you. Are you just closing them randomly, or are you negotiating movement away from the centers that we think must not be very close to Shebins? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. My first one will be on the scholarships awarded. You mentioned all these provinces, and then you said except Gauteng. One would want to get clarity to say why not Gauteng. They didn't apply, or it's an assumption that they are reaching Gauteng. And the other one is on the outstanding issues on program one, program three, program four. There are many outstanding issues, not done, incomplete. What one wants to ask,
in the 2012-13 are all these things that were targeted for and not done, are they included in the in this financial year? Because you identify them as they're lacking, however the implementation up to the end of 2011 was not, have not been taken care of. On a lighter note, the branding guidelines. The Western Cape has adopted the colors of the ruling party. And one wants to ask when they motivate, why do they choose to brand their guidelines with the ruling party's colors? The other one is on the cases. There are cases that you had, others were won, and others could not be completed, and we are saying because of the non-availability of witnesses, because maybe in some it involves the community. Now, how do you then plan to test those things to say if I'm a corruptee and the corruptor is in the department and the corruptee is outside, would you leave those people just squat free to say we can't bring them in because they're a community? With the training of the 5,000 community on caregivers, we were in October, we were at Northern Cape, and this place is a Hope Town. In the public meeting, they were saying to us that close to 12 people that were trained as caregivers, but after training, I mean, they were expecting that they were going to be employed or help the communities. They are unemployed, they are not helping, they are seated with their certificate. So one would want to know to say, we've trained 5,000, and where are those people that you have trained? Where are they located? And is there any follow-up in terms of, I got this training, then I have to be then paid back to the department by working and do the things that they've trained me for, which would then also create decent jobs. My name is Chairperson Nettie Nimogwamanchi.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, firstly, I must say that I must commend the department for their comprehensive annual report. And I must say that they are doing good. I'm saying they are doing good because of the previous records where you would find that this social development is overseeing agencies that have got budgets, and it has been difficult for the department to really get reports from these agencies. But there is a serious improvement, even thanking CEO Virginia from SASA for the improvements that we can see as we go around. This department is the department that has got to make sure that our people are brought above poverty levels, and we are on the right path. I must start like that, Chairperson. Maybe on the questions, my passion is with older persons, you know. The awareness campaigns have taken place in other provinces, others not. When is that coming to other provinces? I had to see that because my province was not part. Maybe as we talk of this, is there a way that we can really make sure as we go on that we have in the district at least old age homes per district, I know it's not an easy thing, but it's necessary these days. Although we know that culturally when you take your grandmother to an old age home, you are seen as an irresponsible person. But as we move around, looking at what is happening to our older people, we really feel it is time that we correct that, a traditional thinking about us being irresponsible and say, is it possible to work towards that? That the older people get the old age homes that will use their pension funds, to contribute to that, because obviously their pension funds, still they don't know how much they get because of, those kids and all those people. And as I talk about that, there was this ruling that made a lot of noise. Maybe today we need to be clarified about the grandparents not accessing foster care. I don't just understand what the ruling is and about, but it made a lot of noise. Maybe today is the day, because really I believe that if there is such a gap, this department can have a law that will make sure that we don't have this type of rulings that makes our old people to panic, to say, I'm looking after these children as my grandchildren, their parents passed on, and I can't be assisted. So I believe it is the right of this department to come up maybe with a bill that will address that. But let's get an explanation on that, because obviously they are panicking outside there. And that the figures tell us about so many young people that are without their parents and are being raised by their grannies due to the natural disasters that happen these days. The EPWP, really we must commend you. You are coming to the rescue of our people out there. Whether they work in the sun for the whole day with that little, it is important. And these initiatives by this department make sure that people have something to put on the table before when they go to bed, and that it's something that is commendable. There is this thing that is also raised in the AG's report about staff members still ignoring the policies and overlooking the internal control, Now, what I want to know, I know we have seen on TV some being, chased out of their offices and all that. But at the end of the day, what happens to them? Do they only go to court, and what about reimbursing the money that they took? What is the department saying about such? Because you can see them to these days, they do go to court. They are arrested, but because we don't know the end results, people will continue to take chances. So how are we getting that money back? There are a lot of monies that have done that. As I speak to that, I will also want to ask you to explain, maybe because some of the slides you were just going and you said you'll come back if we need clarity. Slide 119, just talk to it so that we do that. The tribunals, there is an improvement on the tribunals. Actually, there is an improvement on the people accessing money after the temporary withdrawal. But we have a problem. Let me talk about my constituency, for instance, and how do we help these people. In my constituency, for instance, I visited a social development offices, and there are people there who come on daily basis. When we went to the Northern Cape last week, I would see SASSA offices so empty and say, hey, these people are lucky. You can't find that in our offices. They are very busy. Now, what happens is there are people who maybe have been need confirmation of the doctors that are appointed by this department, the social development. I'm not sure it's social development or it's SASA, but you will assist us, FG, if it's SASA, whereby they need to renew, or some are new because of temporary disability specifically. With temporary disability, they need a doctor. Even though they went to their doctors, there's a doctor, specific doctor from SASA or from DSD, I'm not sure. Now, the problem is these people wait too long and some even die before they can access the doctor because the premises where they ask for this, they don't have a doctor. They do have a doctor that has been appointed by social development, but that doctor can only get is placed at the hospital once a week, and per day they are attending to 200 more of people who are applying for temporary disability. How do you assist as a department in that instance? Because the problem, the doctor is there, but unfortunately the space under which he must work is only loaned to them once a week, and as such he cannot assist many people with 200 per week coming in, and he can only see to 30 people per day per week. How do we assist in such instances? The interventions. There is some irregular expenditures that are being said here about the provinces. Now, these irregular expenditures, some such things, you know, we are not happy to be running to the provinces because there is intervention. We need to see why is there intervention. What have you done as a department to try and assist these people before we can come with a Section 100 intervention? Do you have such programs as a department to assist these departments at provincial level to correct the processes that they are going that will lead them to Section 100 or so, please, because really we cannot continue to have people not sticking to policy and the act. Let me stop the chair. Thank you very much.
Honorable Minister, I'm sure you know that we were in Northern Cape with taking Parliament to people last week for the whole week. We were dealing with all the departments. We had there were few problems that were raised within your department at the Northern Cape, especially the small towns around DR. We were in DR, people from Hanover, the centers in Hanover that are run by social development. Social development in that province just withdrew money, withdraw from funding those centers, especially the ECD centers. And also, what I did not understand there, it's for social development funding also those centers that are not conducive for children to be kept in. We went to two centers there in Hanover. The other one has no toilet, not at all. The other one has got one single toilet for the staff, but not for the children, and they've got 54 kids that they are keeping there in that center. The other one that is attached to the house, they are using the toilet in the house or the porches and go and clean them somewhere. I don't know how are they doing that, but social development has promised to fund those centers. And I don't understand how do they fund. I know children need to be kept somewhere, and be kept busy during the day when the parents are away. But they need to be kept in a center where it is conducive for them to do everything that is supposed to be done by children. Newport, it's also a small town in Northern Cape. Newport people have raised issues that I also did not understand. What is SASSA? Why is SASSA involved in the health of, maybe because SASSA is paying, is giving grants out with the people of Newport, their status, their health status that is plugged on the centers of Newport. My suggestion here, Honorable Minister, is for the team of the National Department to go around our provinces. Because what is said nationally, what is supposed to be done as per the planning or the strategy of nationally to help our people on the ground is not really happening on the ground. And of which I think it's lack of monitoring in the province and also in national. Hence, we once suggested in this committee, whenever there is a report that is being, even if it's budget, the report for what is it, the report for the year of the department, the provinces should also be invited to be part of these sessions, so that they understand what is expected from them. In the report, there is something that says the provinces did not apply. That's why the AG, part of the AG's report, some are qualified, not unqualified, and so on. The provinces that are not giving report in time. Do you now have a strategy that is ending, that will help, or that you are going to use for those provinces and those agencies that do not comply, for them to comply? Because I'm worried if there are provinces that do not comply and there is nothing that is happening to them, the other provinces that are complying will tend also to not give reports, because they know there is nothing that is going to happen if they do not comply. I also want to commend the department in the program of EPWP, but what I want to stress to the department should also monitor that program if it's really it has value for money. If there is no monitoring in what the people are doing outside, there is no way that we will get the results that we are expecting in our communities. Right enough, we were creating jobs for them. But when you create jobs for people, you are expecting results out of those jobs. Thank you, Chairperson, for giving me.
Okay. On my side, can you please explain the 100.26%, you did explain it, but I want to know, where did you get the 20.26% to top up on personnel? On personnel you overspent, where did you get, so that we should be aware whether it won't catch up with you later in your budget. And you also mentioned in your presentation the issue of food security programs that were implemented in all provinces. Can you just briefly tell us what kind of programs are those of food security? And to add on the issue of the ECDs, you also in Colesberg, we visited about 6 ECD facilities in that area. They are overcrowded. We appreciate the fact that the department is providing assistance, particularly financial assistance. They are overcrowded. Security is terrible for those kids. Anything can happen to them. They can disappear, they can be stolen, they can be raped, they can be deleted. It's terrible. and the feeding, they were fed, we arrived and some of them were during the feeding time. They were fed only pap and milk. That's the only feeding food they are getting on a daily basis. Pap and milk, nothing else. No fruits, nothing, no vegetables, nothing. And so we would like, we know we were asking too much from the department. We won't have monies to provide for all those things that we're asking from you. But I think that integrated role of other departments will help a lot in these issues to deal with some of the problems here. So I wanted to bring those issues to the attention of the department so that in future when you plan, you are aware of them. And there's something on the diversion program. Okay, on the training of in 9 provinces and 240 service providers on human trafficking, what are the functions of this service provider exactly to curb human trafficking? Yeah, most of the questions have been asked, Minister. Let me stop there. What have I heard? Yeah, over to you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to touch on a few things, and there are those that are better suited to deal with some of the issues that have been raised. But before we respond, we wish to humbly thank members of the committee, honorable members, for appreciating our work. That motivates us a lot to. Let me start with early childhood development. We started last year focusing, giving more focus on early childhood development because we thought that we should be supporting the Department of Education, because we are saying that education is an apex priority. But we haven't paid more focus on early childhood development and social development. We launched a campaign on ECDs in the rural areas because we're also saying that the rights of the children in the rural areas are equal to the rights of the children in the urban areas. One other thing that we looked into is that there was no standardization in terms of buildings, in terms of allocation of funding. And there were also problems when it comes to the training of practitioners. Well, the construction of buildings or infrastructure is the responsibility of local government, though some provinces are trying very hard to build ECD centers. Like in the Free State, they have now 6 that they have launched in different districts. And we have standardized the allocation. We are saying that we are providing 15 rand per child per day, but we are paying, I think, 166 days per year, not all the school calendar days. So one other thing that we are trying to do is to ensure that we fund the full calendar days. But for the children, we are subsidizing 15 rands per child per day, and then 5 rands is for stimulation or education, 5 rands is for food, and 5 rands is for administration. When we ran a campaign, there was a mushroom of ECD centers, and at some stage we were panicking because people thought it was for raising funds. And we still have that problem with NPOs or NGOs or CPOs, other things that they are for fundraising. So we looked at our challenges, then agreed that we should have a conference. And that is why we had the conference last year. Because one other thing that is with that the whole world is focusing on right now is the first 1,000 days of the child. Because it said that actually you look at the fetus and ensure that the mother eats proper food. And then the first 2 years are the most important, because if you lose those 1,000 days, you don't gain much from the child. You can stimulate and do a lot of things, see when a child has challenges and other things if you focus on the first 1,000 days. But one other good thing that happened is that we made a presentation to to treasury. So for the next financial year, the coming financial year, we have close to 1.4 billion for early childhood development, for child and youth headed households, and as well as VEP. So we think that we are going to improve a lot. But also, we are working with NDA in early childhood development. For instance, in the Free State again, they have got two trucks, and they've recruited young people under EPWP to go to the rural areas just have a visit families maybe three times a week or two times a week, so that they can talk to the children. And unfortunately, this is not I think it's not part of the report, because they launched the program during October month. But we think it's something that we can buy into, because we can't wait for local government, because issues of early childhood development are at the periphery at local government. And well, with many other issues that are related to social development, for instance, when you talk about the haircut, the first place that is looked into or that gets affected is social development in provinces, which is a big challenge, and I think we must try and look into. The issue of food for all, we started with the program of food for all because of a number of frustrations. Last year we went with the president to Mohopong, and we found out that there were children that had malnutrition. And then we asked the Department of Health to scan the country. And we found out that we are above the accepted number of people with malnutrition, more particularly children under the age of 5 years. So what we have been doing during October month, we've been visiting the areas where it's rife. We are still continuing, because we want to touch all of them. And what is problematic is that, for instance, in the cities, you would think that there is no malnutrition. But because people are looking for opportunities in the urban areas, they move from rural areas to urban areas, live in squalor, and then end up having problems. For instance, Gauteng, there is malnutrition. Thekwini, there is malnutrition. So much as there are rural areas, it's also rife in areas the former Bantustans, where there are farms. What else? And also where there are very dry areas. So those are the areas where it's very rife. And also soup kitchens. It happened here in the Western Cape that the Department of Welfare decided to take funding for soup kitchens. So the conditions in the Western Cape are not similar to other provinces. Their problems are historical. And it's one place with a lot of soup kitchens. People could not find work, or families remained destitute because they were paid through the dope system. So that has had effects, and that is why you find farming areas, there is a problem in the Western Cape. And if you go, for instance, to George, you see a big difference between Tembelihle and George. It's like you are in two different worlds. It's shocking, actually. So those are the areas we are targeting. And we're going to try and reach out kakhulu to areas where there are children, because they are a priority. And also what happens to children when they have malnutrition is that they don't respond to treatment when they are ill, and some die in your hands. So we need to move with speed, and we've already started moving and doing some work. And then soup kitchens, we have working with a food bank. We have transferred some money. I think we will account through IDT, because it was social development money that was in IDT for poverty eradication. So we've transferred some money to those NGOs, because what the government of the Western Cape said was that they were investigating them. And when we had a dialogue with the NPOs, they said we've been waiting for the outcome of the investigation, and it's not been coming. So we thought we could hold the fort whilst the department in the province is preparing its response. And then, Honorable Member Rancho, will you please give us the actual areas that you visited, so that we can send someone, not to go and destroy or close the area, but so that we can see what we can do. Because provinces do have their budgets, but sometimes when we feel that it's small things, we ask from a good Samaritan and try and do something. So I think we can do this, because it's children. We need to try and ensure that children are looked after. The issue of the health status food, we also don't agree to this. The reason, actually, we did not went out openly with the names of people from the Department of Health in as far as malnutrition is concerned, it's because of the issues of privacy. Yes, so I don't know how the whole thing happened. Yes, we are trying to help our people on the ground for the whole of October, but also what we have introduced in social development is that people must not sit in their offices, and that policy making is not enough. You need to come up with policy and then go and ensure that it gets implemented on the ground, and so that if provinces can't implement, you come up with new strategies. So everyone from the DG downwards, we've been going to provinces, and people are getting used to the whole thing. The monitoring team, they joined us this year because we've said to them they can't depend on reports, written reports. They must come and see what is happening at a grassroots level. The issue of the foster care, Virginia is here, and Connie, they are going to respond to it, as well as the issue of reimbursement of the money, or and the issue of tribunals and temporary disability. The issue of old age homes, we're going to think about it. I think the Honorable Member is correct. The type of families we have nowadays are very different, and our children no longer taking care. Or also, we don't have time to look after our parents. And what we have been doing is to motivate families to stay with their grandparents or older persons. But what we've also been saying is that communities should not allow older persons to stay on their own. That should be reported. And families also must not leave their loved ones, grandparents on their own, because others have Alzheimer's, and they can wake up in the evening, go anywhere, and they can get lost and never find them. And we've also done the audit of all the age homes, and we are going to renovate a number of some next financial year. But I think we should take the issue of the old age homes in all the provinces, take it to and so that it becomes part of our program, because we have also put the issues of older persons as a priority. Awareness, yes, we agree, we have to go to all provinces. Scholarships. We got some young people in Bekkersdal and Orange Farm this year. They are going to be studying social work from Gauteng. Yes. The issue of taverns, I think we also thought about the issue of taverns, and thought that it's not going to work if we just say to them, shut a closed shop. We need to give them alternatives. Because, for instance, when we visited those that stay in Cape Town, they said, look, we accept what you are saying because we also have children. But our challenge is that we will never have space in the city because it's closed. So it means that the place is only for whites and not for us. Because there is legislation that guides the issue of pubs, where should they be located. So if you close them up, they don't have space in the city. So what we did at the beginning of the year, we invited four taverners who had taverns and who pronounced that they had closed their taverns and they were doing some social development work. And we have taken them as our pilot. We're working with them. And there are also opportunities that are going to come, opportunities of food security. we also think that they can play a role in the programs of food security. And then the cutting of funds, for programs, Nejipale, I think we'll deal with that. I don't want to take a lot of your time. Yes, the last subject, that is my pet subject of overachievement. Because when I joined, when you get appointed, you get a big files, and then I looked at one file that I will never forget. The agreement was saying that an official will form 200 social clubs for older persons, and she would have met her performance agreement. I was shocked because I can form them throughout the country within a year. So what I think happened was that people would put lower numbers so that they can achieve and then get either bonus or whatever. So we've been, everyone is clear that we are no longer doing things that way. And then when you deal with the issues of community mobilization, they are not very easy. And we actually don't work as social development only. There are other stakeholders that we work with. So that is why the whole thing becomes easier, because if we were doing that on our own, we would have not been able to reach the numbers that we've been able to reach. Thank you, Chairperson. I've left other issues.
Yeah, I think let's probably do it this way, please, Chair. There are specific questions that were asked around issues of finance, and I'm going to ask Mr. Modiba to address those. For instance, provinces that are not improving towards a clean audit, issues of supply chain where there are no services or sanctions, you know, and then also the other one on irregular expenditure by provinces. Are there any programs to assist provinces? And then the personnel overspend, if maybe you could just take those questions.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Acting DG. Thanks, Chairperson. The questions relating to finance, I'm going to start with the first one, which relates to regular expenditure by provinces, and what is it as the national we're doing to assist them so that they don't face Section 800. But the first comment I want to say is that the department or the social development sector is structured in such a way that the provincial departments are actually separate spheres, as we all know. So each province has got full responsibility, accountability for their finances, you know, through the accounting officers. However, you know, that being said, as the department, what we're doing in terms of ensuring that issues of, for instance, the irregular expenditure, issues of the audit outcome, issues of maybe financial management, we have structures that are in place. Like, for instance, we have a CFO forum, which is chaired by the CFO National Office, and we meet on a regular basis. And then the scope of the forum is that we look at financial management as a whole. Like, we look at the outcome of the audits, we look at financial management strategies that needs to be in place, policies, processes, and then we look at issues of or challenges that each department is facing in terms of, like, for instance, the irregular expenditure, as you you indicated, because the result of irregular expenditure is because of maybe processes or procurement not being followed, you know, in terms of ensuring that, you know, methods that have been procured are followed appropriately. And then there's several other areas in terms of what, you know, financial misconduct unauthorized. So we deal with those on a periodic basis at that level, you know, as we interact with the provinces. However, they have their own provincial structures in terms of the finance management, audit steering committees, where they meet on a regular basis, including the audit committees that are there in the provinces who monitor progress relating to that. So what we put in place also, or what we've decided to do going forward in terms of, you know, especially looking at the audit outcome and the issues that the provinces are facing, is that we elevated the interaction, you know, on matters of finance, not up to the CFO forum, but at HSDS level. The commitment I referred to actually is the sign of agreement that the HODs are making to say that this is what we're committing to do as the provinces to address issues of irregular expenditure, issues of the negative audit outcome that we're experiencing. So that basically answers the question relating to what is it that we're doing as a national. So we're playing a coordinating role, more of a coordinating role to assist, but then we share best practices, we share, you know, the strategies to ensure that we overcome. And as you can see, the trend of the audit outcome, 2 out of 10 is actually clean, but then we've been improving throughout the years because we have been applying those practices. Now, the top-up, 0.26% in terms of the salaries to absorb social workers. The most provinces, what they did is that they looked at the goods and services budget, and then they utilized it to actually absorb social workers, and that is why, you know, the budget was slightly overspent in terms of that. So that's where basically the funding came from in terms of that. Provinces that do not improve on the audit outcome, what are the consequences to shake up that? I think my initial response relating to that in terms of, you know, the structures that we have, you know, also indirectly responds to the question that has been raised here. But I would just want to add the fact that in terms of the audit process, each department, national or provincial, is actually expected to come up with an audit action plan that focuses or responds to the outcome of the audit. And that audit action plan is submitted to the National Treasury and then also to the AGSA. And then through the structures within the provinces, like audit committee or audit steering committee, that the progress against the items that or the actions that need to be implemented are monitored. And then action is taken where then there's no progress or satisfactory progress relating to addressing such matters. The plan to ensure that we improve on supply chain. Yeah, that is a problematic area and it's affecting everybody. I think most departments are actually affected. As the Department of Social Development, what we have managed to do, which was not happening in the past, is that we came closer to the strategy unit. We're actually trying to plan together and make sure that we align our planning processes, because the outcome of the planning through the strategy should result in us having a procurement plan. And then if we have that in advance, you know, a procurement plan in advance, we are able to avoid issues of supply chain management irregularities, because we there won't be in many instances where we are not following maybe proper procurement processes in terms of that. So that is the first, you know, phase of addressing the issues that are challenging in supply chain management. However, in terms of the national department, in addition to the planning, in terms of the national, what we did also, we came up with a strategy, a turnaround strategy in supply chain management. The audit committee instructed that we come up with a general strategy, which will indicate in detail what actions we're putting in place to overcome the outcome of the supply chain management. It should be noted, however, that the year under review that we're presenting, it was the first time that the Auditor General SA was auditing the contract and compliance matters on supply chain. That is why you see a jump in terms of compliance matters on supply chain. You know, but we are addressing that. And then there's workshops that are planned in the fourth quarter. There's advisory with line managers, you know, city line managers that are planned also. The information sessions, for instance, that are planned, because most of the time the processes are as a result of maybe lack of understanding of what the process should be. Okay, thank you very much.
The slide. Slide number 119, I think.
Okay. Sorry, I forgot that. The slide 119, which is reflected there, these are the investigations that are conducted internally within departments. Normally, the Auditor General has got a standing agenda item every time they engage with us to say, do you have fraud in the department? What are the supply chain management related regularities, or what are the financial misconduct? And we have processes and systems internally where we record, you know, or cases of maybe financial misconduct, and then they are categorized in that in those three categories, like supply chain management related irregularities, fraud, and then other financial misconduct. Financial misconduct will be issues like maybe assets are lost and accidents and no-shows and all of those. So at that, as of the 31st of March 2012, you know, the four provinces, Gauteng, had cases that were under investigation internally within the Gauteng province that related to supply chain fraud and also other financial misconduct. KZN was only relating to other financial misconduct, which are the two cases I referred to where, you know, the security project and the catering project were not formalized in terms of service level agreements. So they are in the process of investigating that and going out on tender. And then the Northern Cape related to, like, procurement processes maybe not being followed. And then the Western Cape also other financial. So these are cases that are ongoing in terms of the investigations and then have not been finalized as a reporting there.
Chair, may I then ask Ms. Corinne Malo to address the question that was specific to welfare services, the one on scholarships that Gauteng didn't have any, for instance, on all the persons awareness campaign, the ruling that needs to be clarified, as well as the role of service providers on human trafficking.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. I'll start with the drop-in centers. I think the Minister touched on the issue of drop-in centers, that if we can get details, we will investigate in terms of the closure and functioning of the drop-in center and the soup kitchen in that particular municipality area, because currently we don't have information as to the details of the case. And then the next one on the overachievement and under-targeting, I think we all agree, as the Minister said, that under-targeting is there. So we have since come up with a demand model that will really assist us based on the information on the new the census data that has come out to make sure that we improve on our targeting, because in some cases it was very low, but in some cases the overachievements were basically not having much financial implications because it was on the numbers. So we find that it's personnel that is existing that reached more people. The costs there were mainly the traveling and the catering, so it was not as much it didn't cause much difference. But however, we agree and acknowledge that the targeting is very, very low. In terms of the shebeens, just to add to what the Minister said, yes, alternatives are very key, and that to just inform the committee that we're working very closely with the Department of Trade and Industry. Since in the report we're mentioning that we have approved the program of action after the summit. So Trade and Industry is really finalizing norms and standards, because currently I think members know that we've got different legislations in terms of the Liquor Act and also the liquor boards that are operating in provinces. So what they are trying to do is to also ensure that there's uniformity in terms of all the registration and the location, the density of the shebeens and liquor outlets that are there in provinces. So the issue of alternatives will have to come in strongly there, because others were even saying, because we did have a session with liquor and with the traders, they were saying, this school found me here. I was here before, so the site was allocated to a school. Now you're saying I must move. Where do I move to? So those are the alternatives that we're working with them because they've organized themselves. We're working with them to explore alternatives. There are some that have already moved. The four cases that the Minister said is one example. People are really moving towards alternative businesses. Training in human trafficking. There was a question as to say what is the role of those, or what will be the role of those people who have been trained. I'm sure we are aware of the human trafficking bill. The role of the people we've trained, social development is a key role to play in that new legislation. We do have 13 shelters that we identified, I think, from the 2010 preparation. those 13 charters are accommodating specifically victims of human trafficking. So we needed to come up with a specific program for them because it's a syndicate and it's the specialized type of victims that need specialized intervention. So we're training service providers in that area. And also to be able to understand their role in terms of supporting victims of human trafficking. And lastly, social development is tasked with a responsibility in the legislation to be able to identify a victim of human trafficking and certify the person. So for you to be able to do that, you need a particular training. So we've designed a guideline for them, so we're training them on that area. Scholarship, yes, Gauteng did not have an intake for 11-12. However, they used their own budget because what we're reporting is a national scholarship program. But within their budget, they managed to have an intake of 150 students for that year using their own provincial budget. However, moving forward, as we're moving around, Gauteng also, we identified students that we're going to fund from our national scholarship program, just like Beggars Dal, Orange Farm, and other areas around Gauteng. There was a question on what will happen to things that were not achieved or provinces that were not targeted, either for awareness campaigns or for training and other programs. What we have done is to reprioritize for this is 13, 12, 13, and 13, 14, so that we spread across, because some of the reasons why there were no achievements is basically human resource and also finances. So we're going to spread to, we have already drafted an APP for 13, 14 that incorporates some of them, and some we are currently doing this year because the report will present later next year. I'm trying to look at the... I'll come back to the High Court judgment. Virginia will ask, and then I will try to answer certain things. Then I will come in, because I'm still putting in some. I'm reading the opinion. My legal person is not here. Thank you.
2 minutes, Virginia. On the matter of the foster chairperson members, on the matter of the court case, Judge Solduka on the 29th of August ruled that in families there should be issues of common duty to support or visible means of support. As a result of that, there was interpretive problems, which has been tested again in court in December in terms of a grandmother and three kids living with her, and if the commissioner, which is the justice official, has said no, we won't grant a foster care grant. So it's a matter of interpretation. The judge, in fact, said there should not be a rigid approach. The best interest of the child should always be held high. And it is, what is the means of the family? Because there must be visible means. So it can't be construed that a grandmother's pension of 1,200 actually becomes visible means of support. This will be challenged again in December because despite the warning, don't be rigid, don't interpret this incorrectly. We are scared, despite many conversations and legal opinions within social development, that says there is sufficient flexibility, this should not affect our grandparents. We find that some commissioners are still interpreting it a bit rigid. Our legal advisor has gone to the justice cluster, has addressed them in this, but I think if it doesn't resolve itself, there will be continued court matters to raise it. We from the department continue to work with it to give clarity, as well as looking at other ways to support families, particularly child-headed households as a priority, and then obviously children living with their grandparents. We would urge members to actually contact us if they are aware of any matters of foster care that where grannies have been given this incorrect review, that we could assist where possible. I'll give my number. It's 082-550-550-4951. The other matter raised, Chairperson, you've got it? Yeah.
The other matter raised was about 0082-550-4951. The other matter raised was in connection with, do we get money recovered when people have committed fraud? Our first port is obviously the Government Employee Pension Fund, where we will put a hold on the pension in order to support and recover the money. We have recovered up in the last financial recoveries were up to 25 million. We will always struggle to get money back from the beneficiaries who have committed fraud, but from the officials, we sign acknowledgement of debt, have orders against their bank accounts, or go against the pension to recover. Thank you, Chair.
Could you please, Virginia, the one on doctors, please, yes, yeah. For tribunals, people being referred to doctors and waiting longer.
Okay, on the temporary disability grant, the first thing the person must do is come back into SASSA. It's called an internal review process before they even go to an appeal process. That's the first process must be conducted. We know that most of the reviews are on disability grounds. With regard to doctors, we have procured doctors, but we're not happy with the quality. So currently we have a team who's going around to see the work of the actual doctors. This is slowing it down a bit. We will try and put more resources into it. We're also using state hospitals. And we have found with our new SASSA offices, which we currently and have received the savings of last year from Treasury, in the new SASSA offices, we will create a little surgery as well to take pressure off the SASSA. But that just means SASSA takes more and more responsibility that should be in the health domain. But to assist in problem areas, we will make a little surgery available within the new SASSA office. Thank you.
Chair, please, we still have at least two questions from Mr. Neshpale. The one is on sustainable livelihoods and the other one on food security programs that the department has.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Minister and the Acting DG. There was a question in terms of the government's agenda, social agenda on the issues of sustainable livelihood and the creation of jobs. We should report that through the EP there are three areas that you need to look at. It's the issue of job creation, the issue of assisting communities after mobilizations with projects, cooperatives, and the last part is the issue of the provision of their sustenance in terms of food gardens, etc., etc. So in that range, the issue of the job creation, through EPWP, you realize last year we achieved 829,000 job opportunities, with 152 of those coming from the social sector. The up to last year, by beginning of this financial year, we had, through all provinces, have spent over 18 million, cumulatively so, from the past 3 years, on the projects that we have. These projects that in provinces are cooperatives that have been created through in the social development. I think the detail could be supplied for that.
The next aspect was the issue of food programs, food security issue.
I think the department participated in the Zero Hunger campaign, and one of the strategy which we are focusing on is the issue of provision of food access through the our taking DSD to communities October month, and through the program that we have, one of the things that we have is the we are suited for. We do profiles of all the areas. You might have seen how many profiles we have done. We identify needy, poor family, actually even malnutrition together with health. And we then provide food. We also create food gardens. As part of the food security program, we had a lot of over 4,000 food gardens were created in the communities, and over 1 million, as reported, food were provided through the food bank, which is our partner in terms of the provision of food security. But the major part is the issue of, I think the minister touched on this one, issue of mobilizing community
providing awareness and active search to get those people that are vulnerable, that they need to be provided with information, with provided with food. The last part was the question on the issue of HIV and AIDS care workers that were trained and are not absorbed. I think we will have to investigate that because how the care workers are being identified and trained, they are trained within the NPOs, they are placed within the NPOs, and those NPOs are funded so that they can fund the care workers. So if there is one that has been trained and not placed within those NPOs, I think one will need to look at the issues. One of the issues that have come, which is very problematic, is that already in the private sector, there are schools that have opened, like FET College, that charges children or young people 18,000 per year to be trained as care workers. That, I think in that we have realized that they can create, they train them. Once they are trained, there's nowhere to go because they are not part and parcel. The ones that are trained are on stipend, and we have the data in terms of where they are. But we will investigate those to check what are the issues, and they will report back. Thank you.
Just to summarize on our part, really, just important points, I think, yes, 30 seconds, actually. The minister that I have, who is with us today, she heads MINMEC. So strategy, policies, programs, and social development, she sits in at MINMEC and threshes out and gives direction to us as senior officials. As senior officials, we meet as heads of social development. We have the CFO forum. We have social welfare forum where we discuss all these matters and things. And also we do joint sector strategy planning to try and iron these things out. In some of the things, please, members of the select committee, we are short of social workers. We are short of auxiliary social workers, even community development practitioners. But Minister is ensuring that with time, the so-called social service professionals that service our communities are indeed there in every community in South Africa so that there may be improvement in the kind of work social development is responsible for. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, the Minister and your team, I would like to take this opportunity to thank you very much. As I have said, that this report has been very comprehensive and we have identified a lot of achievements made by the department. The committee really, really appreciates that, and we hope that you'll keep up the good work you are doing in the department for the sake of our people. Thank you very much.